Fire and rescue.
There's Windsor Castle here.
Yeah.
We've got a fire in the private chapel at Windsor Castle.
The private chapel?
In the private chapel. Come to the quadrangle as arranged.
Smoke billowing from Windsor Castle.
A huge fire is tearing through Windsor Castle, with flames shooting from the turrets and smoke pouring over the town.
In November 1992, over 200 firefighters battled to save one of Britain's most important buildings. This is their story.
The adrenaline's flowing, and you're so focused on what you're doing that you don't think of anything else.
I couldn't quite believe my eyes, to be honest. It looked like there was a, a significant fire developing.
There's potentially firefighters that are in trouble.
As more than 100 rooms burned, filled with millions of pounds worth of art, the world looked on.
It seems likely that priceless national treasures will have been irreparably damaged or destroyed.
There was a raging inferno that was going to kind of take away the whole castle.
Newly discovered footage reveals what it was really like fighting this historic fire.
The ball of flame rolled out behind them. My heart was in my mouth because I thought I'd just killed two of my mates.
It's clear that what we're witnessing here is a national tragedy.
All those firemen arriving, I did not see how they were going to contain it.
The Windsor Castle Fire, the untold story. 20th of November, 1992. A clock ticks up to 8 a.m. Shoppers walk along a pavement shrouded in mist.
I remember it was a really cold, misty day. We were regilding the state dining room ceiling, and we had a big birdcage scaffold. We'd have to be on site and, as we would call, like brush in hand, at our stations by 8 o'clock. Every different trade had apprentices there, and you could see the level of commitment from everybody.
Old buildings constantly need to be renewed and repaired. And they were working through Windsor Castle room by room. It is often the case, of course, that when somewhere is being restored, things can go wrong.
Wesley Kerr, former royal correspondent, Buckingham Palace.
That day in November 1992, I recall it starting in a fairly low-key way. The Queen would tend to go to Windsor on the Friday morning. It was very much the Queen's home, and it's where she spent most of her weekends when she was based in London.
I went down to Buckingham Palace to have a cup of coffee with the Queen's press secretary, Charles Anson, as you do. And so I was sitting in the press office with Charles, and we were just chatting about this, that and the other upcoming events, when one of the Queen's senior staff came, poked his head round the door and said, "Oh, Charles, could I have a word?" And they went out together into the corridor.
Former royal correspondent Jenny Bond, 11:15, apprentice specialist decorator Dean Lansdale.
We'd just come back from break, and I heard a muffled shouting. And one of the other guilders, because I was the youngest and the apprentice, was, "Go and see what that noise is." I was in the state dining room. So I've walked through the drawing rooms and turned right into the Royal Chapel. I was literally just confronted with the curtain on fire. When you see proper flame, when you see proper fire, it's terrifying.
The fire began after a high-powered spotlight used in the building works had been left too close to a curtain. Within minutes, the flames were spreading rapidly across the Queen's private chapel.
I still wasn't sure if anyone else knew about this, because the castle was a big, big place, and I wasn't sure. I remember thinking, does anyone know this place is on fire?
11:35, a man in uniform with epaulettes presses a red button labelled Windsor Castle to take a telephone call.
Fire and rescue.
There's Windsor Castle here.
Yes.
We've got a fire in the private chapel at Windsor Castle.
The private chapel?
In the private chapel. Come to the quadrangle as arranged.
Just a moment. Now, is this a fire alarm or an actual fire?
It's a fire being reported.
Fire in private chapel.
Information's logged on a screen.
And you wish us to attend the quadrangle? The quadrangle, is that...
You're far in the private chapel of Windsor Castle, okay?
Right, rendezvous at the quadrangle.
Sorry?
We're to rendezvous at the quadrangle.
Yes, come to the landscape as arranged.
I've been in a meeting in the morning at Brigade Headquarters. And I'd literally just got back to Slough, and then the alarm went off. I thought we were getting called out to another exercise. And then it weren't until I saw the smoke on the Windsor Relief Road, I realised we had a job.
At the front of Windsor Castle, a sculpted lion bearing a shield. Charles Anson, the Queen's Press Secretary, 1990 to 1997.
I got a phone call saying there was a small fire that had started out at Windsor. I automatically assumed that the firemen would be on top of it very soon indeed.
Jenny Bond.
My pager went off, or a pager in those days, and I looked at it and it said, Windsor Castle is on fire. I screamed out of the palace and made my way down the M4 as quickly as I could.
We'd cleared pretty much what we could. There was a painting at the far end of the chapel leant against the wall, and I thought, I'll get that. And as I grabbed it, I just remembered this massive heat on my hands and my face. And I got flash burns. I grabbed the painting, got into the Etcheries entrance, and we slammed the doors.
8 minutes after the alarm was raised, the fire had engulfed the private chapel and now threatened almost 1,000 rooms. In immediate danger were state rooms, including the crimson and green drawing rooms and the Grand St George's Hall.
We just ran, and I remember looking out of the long gallery window to my right, and I remember seeing all the trades and the first fire engines arriving into the quadrangle.
A fire engine rushes along a street in Windsor, passing crowds who are looking to where grey smoke is pouring from the distant castle.
We pulled up, we're on our own, basically, and I knew I was going to have to be officer in charge. So I had to have my wits about me, and I told all my lads to stay on the machine. Don't do anything. I'm going to go in and see what's occurring. I saw what was obviously a really big fire, and it was glowing near enough white hot in some places. It was getting fed by the debris that was falling down from the ceiling above. And I made pumps 10, which was asking for 10 fire engines to be on the scene.
11:45, plumes of smoke rising from the castle turrets.
Charlie 171, go ahead, over.
Steve Thompson, Officer Koza, made pump 10, over.
Firefighters climb into the cab of another fire engine.
Well, it was pretty obvious I needed 10. It was, if I ordered 5, I think that would have been a dereliction of duty, really.
Fire in a castle window.
We were actually out in the fire appliance when the first call came in. As Windsor Castle is what we call a special risk, and there's a tactical plan, we do a lot of training and exercising, and we thought it was another exercise.
We need to contain the fire and obviously try to put it out, but there was no chance of doing that from where we were, so it was trying to stop the spread. I briefed my men, they went in and tried to fight the fire. Then I got the hydraulic platform into use, and as it was going past the window blew out and a big ball of flame rolled out behind them.
An explosion of white flame.
My heart was in my mouth because I thought I'd just killed two of my mates.
two firemen on the platform.
I screamed into my radio up to the officer in charge of the hydraulic platform, and he said, "It's all right, I've seen it." And he just panned the hydraulic platform away, the fireball went up, and then he brought it back in and carried on with the job he was doing. He was just trying to contain the fire and hopefully try to diminish it, put it out. Well, you have got tough calls to make, but then that's the nature of the beast. If you can't do those decisions, then perhaps you should look at another employer.
The clock ticks up to 12 o'clock. Thick clouds of smoke rising from the imposing stone castle. Then another fire engine rushing up the hill towards the scene.
When we arrived at the castle, we were ushered in by security. And we parked in the quadrangle. We could see heavy smoke and flames coming from a sort of one end of St George's Hall. Probably only been to one significant fire, and that was probably a bedroom fire in a house. So to turn up to a huge historic building such as a castle, had quite an impact on me.
Traffic on a motorway. A fire engine driving at speed reflected in a wing mirror. Jenny Bond.
What I'd learnt in those initial moments after finding out the castle was on fire, that probably it was fairly minor, probably it was under control. And as I drove down the M4 towards the castle, I thought, well, yes, obviously, you know, it's going to be over by the time I get there.
Smoke above the castle.
I could not believe my eyes when two, 3 miles away, I could see the smoke billowing into the sky. It was clear that this was an enormous fire, which was by then totally out of control.
Reports are coming in of a fire at Windsor Castle. Buckingham Palace has just confirmed that it is a major fire. One eyewitness said flames and smoke are visible from the roof of the northeast wing near the Queen's apartments.
The clock ticks up to 12:12. Firefighters in safety helmets beside fire engines in the quadrangle.
Calling with priority, go ahead of us.
HD Delta 191 from SDO Ashfield. Make pump 20. 10-10 officers required. Over.
36 minutes after the first alarm was raised, 20 fire engines and over 100 firefighters were needed to tackle the blaze.
The streets were just lined up with people. I felt quite emotional. The people just waving at us as we were going through the town of Windsor. But you're also focusing on potentially the job that you're going to go into, and you're thinking ahead about what duties you might be able to perform. You have to psychologically get into that right headspace as well.
Many of the arriving firefighters were directed to battle the fire in the east end of St George's Hall.
We were asked to make entry into the castle and start fighting the fire and trying to stop it travelling up St George's Hall. The smoke layer was probably just over head height, and there was a lot of ornate plaster work falling down from a great height.
The deep smoke layer hid a major problem for the firefighters. The fire was travelling above a false ceiling. This large void, filled with dust and dry timber beams, was the perfect place for the fire to spread undetected.
I don't think anyone knew about the void in the ceiling. The fire was going through that, reaching the next wall and coming down behind the firefighters.
We sheltered under one of the arches. We're aiming our jet up into the smoke layer. Unfortunately, we couldn't see where the fire was, so it was having little effect. And it wasn't long after that that we withdrew.
103, clouds of smoke still billowing above the castle walls as a crowd watches from a distance.
London Hillingdon pump, can you attend? Make pump 25. Windsor Castle, over.
With 25 fire engines needed, the Windsor Castle fire was now a major incident. All fire stations in the surrounding counties were put on alert, and an incident control room was set up.
My role back at the headquarters was to take charge of the logistical support. People were ringing up to give us what they thought was helpful advice on how we needed to tackle the fire.
On a door, a sign, major incident room, officers taking calls.
As we left the motorway to proceed into Windsor, we could see by the flames and apartments on fire, it was already through the roof. I jumped out to go to report at the control and run around the back and bumped into Prince Andrew on his mobile phone.
I have spoken to Her Majesty and I have given her as best a sit-rep as I possibly can.
Prince Andrew was actually pretty key to how the early part of the operation went. He'd been there at the castle doing some research work. And suddenly he was alerted to the fact there was a fire. So he was on the scene immediately and pretty much took charge, I think, in those initial hours.
It was a very, very difficult location. Prince Andrew actually made himself available. So he was saying, where do you want to get to? I'll show you the way there. But even he came unstuck on a couple of occasions because it's such a complex building that he was leading them one way and then suddenly said, oh, no, we can't get through this way.
A model of the layout of the castle, with several rooms filled with blazing flames.
In just over 2 hours, the fire had destroyed the private chapel, St George's Hall, and a number of smaller rooms. Flames were moving towards the Queen's private apartments, full of priceless works of art and her personal possessions. In the fire's immediate path were the green and crimson drawing rooms.
We noticed the big double doors, and I opened one of the doors slightly and I could feel the air being sucked in, and I noticed there was a lot of flame behind it. Little did we know that above these staterooms was what they call the grace and favour rooms, bedrooms, bathrooms, etc. And the fire was up there, spreading through these rooms. I'd backed out into the green drawing room. I noticed that the ceiling dropped down approximately 12 inches. I just shouted, stand from under, when the ceiling come away at one side and it flipped over completely, come down. I ran out onto the east terrace and shouted down. We had persons reported, which is a term used that somebody was trapped.
Firefighter Les Hawksfield.
One of the parts of a firefighter's training is to understand what an evacuation signal is, which is repeated blasts on a whistle. I remember hearing whistles from within the quadrangle being blown, which was very surreal. I never expected that to hear that in my career. You're briefed, you're taught to, if you hear those whistles, to start blowing them yourself. So we started running towards the building, blowing our whistles to ensure that everybody was aware that our evacuation was being announced.
This is quite serious now. There's potentially firefighters that are in trouble. That's just a completely different feeling. You're going into a situation where you know there's a serious fire, you know there's an evacuation, you know that potentially that there's firefighters missing.
I went back in again. There was one firefighter and he was trapped up to his waist in timbers and rubble, semi-conscious. Well, I was hoping that he was going to be okay, but I believe he did have a broken arm.
2:29, firemen on a hydraulic platform spray water onto the flames.
Charlie 191, pass your priority, Evan.
HD from DCFO Harper at special address 1. Brake pump 35-35.
The call for 35 fire engines made this one of the largest attended building fires Britain had ever seen. Over 200 firefighters were now battling to save Windsor Castle.
I was so intent on what we were doing with the fire, it weren't until I turned around and I saw every man and his dog was in the quadrangle, and I thought, well, where did these come from?
There were so many people running around, you had to concentrate basically what the job that you had to do.
a huge fire is tearing through Windsor Castle. All afternoon, the battle has raged on two fronts, one to stop the flames, the other to save priceless paintings and ornaments.
An antique floor lamp standing in the quadrangle.
Some of the officers had been designated to salvage work, and they were organising the army and the volunteers.
We saw the work that was frantically going on to try and rescue the works of art. Troops were brought in as from their barracks nearby. I remember so graphically this enormous carpet being carried out on people's shoulders. There was a convoy of people. People were coming out with artworks under their arms, pieces of porcelain, wonderful paintings, anything they could do to rescue them from the flames.
Some of the masonry and fabric affected by this fire at Windsor Castle can no doubt be restored or repaired, but it seems likely that priceless national treasures will have been irreparably damaged or destroyed.
Helpers carrying books.
And it was very lucky, actually, that it wasn't raining that November day, because much of this stuff actually went out onto lawns. Many of the most precious artefacts, really, in human history, were very close to the seat of the fire, in the Royal Library and the print room.
These portraits, commissioned by George IV to celebrate the defeat of Napoleon, worth several million pounds each, were just two of many rescued from the Waterloo Chamber.
The paintings are loaded into a removal van.
You're very conscious of whose home it was. So, you know, you just took extra care and tried to kind of do the best you could. The royal household had a team of people that were identifying articles, furniture, pictures, anything possible to be moved out. So we were helping with those guys.
My fellow decorators, carpenters, electricians, plasterers, scaffolders, labourers. They were the real heroes. They were just literally clearing out rooms in minutes. The fire was coming down one end and they were running in and they were clearing out entire staterooms.
Normally there would be an elaborate process. If there's a loan from the Royal Collection, it had to be signed off by Her Majesty, but there was no signing off that day. All of those conservation measures were, as it were, almost literally thrown out of the window as they try and clear the rooms.
Everything was then taken into what's called the engine court, which is just off the quadrangle, and then a fleet of vans was coming up and collecting it and taking it out.
These priceless treasures were driven to one of the Royal Collection's high-security storage centres, in nearby Home Park.
We walked through an anteroom that had on the wall frames where pictures were. And they'd obviously already been taken. But behind those original pictures were drawings. They were now exposed for the first time.
The salvage operation had uncovered 16 hidden pantomime figures, painted for the young queen and her sister, Princess Margaret, in the 1940s.
The paintings are, I mean, they're quite impressionistic scenes. So they were the backdrop for these pantomimes, which performed by the princesses for charity in the Second World War. And it was very important in the queen's life because it's, in a way, her training as a public speaker, that she had to perform leading roles in the pantomime as a young woman.
3 o'clock, flames blaze within the castle walls.
In just over 3 hours, many rooms have been gutted by the fire. Even with hoses blasting thousands of litres of water at the blaze, there was no sign the flames were slowing down.
I did not see how, even with all those firemen arriving, more than 200, training their hoses on the flames, I didn't see how they were going to contain it.
The clock ticks up to 3:15, then smoke and flames rising above the castle walls.
Fire doesn't hold back. It doesn't matter who you are. And everything ends up just being a black, charred mess.
After burning fiercely for 4 hours, the fire had destroyed staterooms, offices, and other private spaces. With her personal apartment still at risk, the Queen travelled to Windsor to see the damage for herself.
I happened to be at the entrance to the castle when the Queen arrived. I met her eye at the time, and it was a very, very sombre moment. I realised how much she valued the castle, and to see it in that state must have been a horrible experience for her. She just looked incredibly sad. Incredibly sad.
The Queen with Prince Andrew watching the fire.
Fire doesn't discriminate. She looked physically upset without crying. She, you know, she looked concerned, as any person would be.
The Queen in a coat and rubber boots talks with a fireman.
The Queen herself wanted to go in to recover some of the smaller items within her own apartments, where she would have a better idea where they were and which ones she wanted to take out.
The Queen was led into the burning castle, avoiding the rooms which were still fiercely ablaze. This fire was the latest in a long list of tragedies and scandals the Queen had to deal with that year.
1992 was one disaster after another, really, which had started with the surprise separation of Prince Andrew and the Duchess of York.
Emerging from the car, the Duchess refused to acknowledge the press, determinedly leading her daughter into her classroom.
Then came along the Andrew Morton book, Diana, Her True Story. It was sensational. It was headline news everywhere.
There are now just 24 hours to go before the book, which claims to expose serious rifts in her marriage, goes on sale.
And I thought after that, well, maybe have a quiet summer. No, we did not have a quiet summer. Because in the middle of summer, I was called by the office, Jen, we need you in here really quickly. It's Fergie. Fergie, what's she done now? Oh, she's been found topless, having her toes sucked by her financial advisor. Another huge story.
That was a very, very full year, full of the unexpected. It was a difficult year, and you never knew what was going to happen each day. Certainly a difficult year for the monarchy.
4 o'clock, a lone figure walks along the drive towards the castle, then the model layout of the building with several rooms alight.
After more than 4.5 hours, the fire had already destroyed nearly all the staterooms on the south side. It was now moving north, threatening the royal kitchens and the Brunswick Tower.
It's not nice to see the fire gaining on you. We went to see if we could find another way in to fight the fire, and we found like a passageway that went all the way to the Brunswick Tower. We could see the flames at the end of the passage. We decided that there's no way we can fight the fire from here.
There was so much material falling down, collapsing, that there were noises all the time around you. The bit that you're really looking out for is the noises behind you, because when you start hearing noises behind you, then you start to worry.
With close to 1,000 rooms at risk, firefighters had earlier employed a tactic they hoped would stop the fire. Fire breaks.
The incident commanders looked at the plans, consulted with the experts at the castle, and made decisions about where we would tactically try and, you know, stop the fire spreading. So you'll use natural obstacles such as, you know, thick walls, thick part of the construction.
Training a hose on the fire.
The stone walls in St George's Hall and the Grand Reception Room had been chosen as one firebreak. The other, in the Green Drawing Room, was created by stripping flammable ornate plaster from the walls. As firefighters protected these lines of defence, some rooms would be sacrificed.
It's like a military action. Sometimes you have to lose ground to win the battle. And that's exactly what you do with a fire. You have to give a sacrificial lamb away to win.
Sub-officer Mick Kozer At 5 p.m, a castle tower in shadow against a sunset sky, then a TV news report from the day.
It's clear that what we're witnessing here is a national tragedy. 5 hours on, the flames still rising from the turrets, smoke as thick as ever, the battle for control still far from over.
The fire breaks were holding, but the blaze was beginning to take its toll.
The castle was silhouetted by the flames themselves. Firemen were hosing it down as fast as they could. 1.5 million almost gallons of water being poured onto the castle. They were doing all they could to just save some of it.
Wherever I could see flames coming through, I'd just hit that with the jet. But there was so much burning material within the building that invariably you'd hit it, the flames would stop for a few seconds, you'd move on to something else and they'd be back again almost straight away.
If you're a firefighter going in to fight the fire, that is hard work. It really takes it out of you. Say my lads went in 6 or 7 times. I was concerned for them and I was saying, look, you don't have to go in again. And they were determined to go back in.
We were all running on adrenaline for the first few hours anyway, so we didn't feel exhausted. It was only really as it got darker that we started to feel drained.
I understand that the Queen has now left the castle. She, as we've heard, is quite devastated by what has happened. She's seen some of the damage for herself.
Towards the end of the day, it became clear, after the Queen had removed things from her own apartments, that there was no way in which she would be able to stay in the castle. So she returned to Buckingham Palace, which was very unusual. I remember her coming in. We said how sorry we were, and Queen, in what was then a very quite husky voice from the smoke at Windsor, she said, well, at least we saved the pictures.
Remarkably little was lost. This is what's extraordinary. There was an Augustus Pugin sideboard, and that was much too heavy to remove and was completely destroyed in the fire. And one very, very significant painting was destroyed in the fire. It was an enormous painting of George III and his sons reviewing troops in an imagined scene at Hyde Park. But it is really astonishing that there were only 2 significant losses to art history in this enormous fire.
The layout shows the fires filled more rooms.
Late in the evening, the key battle for the firefighters was now in the northeast corner of the castle. The Brunswick Tower.
8 p.m., in semi-darkness, a jet of water aimed at the flames rising from the tower.
A firefighter would describe the Brunswick Tower as being fully involved at that point, so the whole of the building was alight. There were flames coming out of the windows all the way up the tower, pretty much. There's clearly lots of wood, furnishings and so on that was alight.
The roof had finally gone on the Brunswick Tower properly. And you're just looking at it, it was, I'd say, fantastic and terrible at the same time.
All the floors internally collapsed, and that became a bit of a Roman candle, really.
The fire inside the tower reached 820 degrees Celsius, and even the efforts of the firefighters couldn't stop it from burning for hours.
Fire Brigade are certainly talking about the early hours of the morning before it's put out. They are insisting that it is contained, that their strategy has worked, which was to contain it between 2 strong structural points of the castle.
After dark, the blaze in the tower. Above the castle walls, a white glow among clouds of orange smoke against the night sky. The next day, 21st of November 1992, crew members on the hydraulic platform train a hose on the fire.
In the early hours of Saturday morning, the flames were finally extinguished.
I think it was around about something like 2 o'clock in the morning when I realised that actually all the flames had disappeared. We'd actually put the main bulk of the fire out. It was still smouldering underneath the rubble, of course.
The following day, as firefighters dampened down the smoking ruins, it was time to count the cost of the fire.
Charred debris.
115 rooms had been destroyed, causing £56 million worth of damage in today's money.
The palace arranged for us to go in and have a tour and see just how bad it was. And my goodness me, it was worse really than I could have imagined.
So some ways it didn't look like it was that bad a damage, but once you got inside and looked at things like St George's Hall and I realised how badly damaged the kitchen was and so on, then you really started to get a sense of melancholy to a certain extent about how much damage had been done to, you know, such a historic building.
Those that were devastated by the fire were just piles of rubble and the smell and the soot and the it was a really shocking sight.
A room filled with burnt rubble.
In the castle there was ornate gold leaf plasterwork all over the floor, and then to see it on the floor like that, soaking wet, it looked absolutely awful.
Wisps of smoke rising from the charred furnishings. In daylight, white plumes of smoke billow from the damaged castle.
The world's oldest inhabited castle was in ruins. Before the smoke cleared, it was at the centre of a fresh controversy.
The day after the fire, Peter Brook, the heritage secretary, came down and we were quite surprised when he said the bill for the castle repairs, the government would foot it.
The situation is that patently, and I think I would, everyone in the nation would expect me to say this in response, we will be taking the castle back to the condition in which it was.
Headline, storm over fire bill.
The media, including myself, you know, kind of seized on that and thought, well, is this right? Is this correct? Why should we pay for their castle, even though it's our castle? Why should we pay for the repairs? And that was a thought that was taken up by most of the media and gathered momentum and became the big story of the next few days.
When we have 5,000 jobs going on the railways, when we have 30,000 miners' jobs going, because there isn't public money, literally overnight, the heritage secretary can say, ah, yes, but we can find money for this straight away.
For someone like myself and others working for the royal family, it felt somewhat vindictive that in a moment of such crisis, there should be such criticism.
A line of guests bow as the Queen walks into the Guildhall.
The Queen was under intense scrutiny to see how she would respond to this criticism.
4 days after the fire, there was a set piece speech that the Queen was going to make at Guildhall. It was a celebration because this was the 40th anniversary year of her accession to the throne.
One was very conscious that she had a cold and that also the strength of her voice had been affected by the smoke. During the course of that morning, the huskiness of her voice led her to think that actually it would make more sense for her to speak before lunch rather than after lunch.
She looked quite tiny as she came into the Guildhall and she stood up to make a speech and her arm, I remember she, as she spoke, she seemed nervous and almost trembling.
My Lord Mayor, could I say first how delighted I am that the Lady Mary is here today.
Seeing the Queen speak publicly in that slightly croaky voice, of course, was emotional.
This generosity and wholehearted kindness of the Corporation of the City to Prince Philip and me would be welcome at any time, but at this particular moment, in the aftermath of Friday's tragic fire at Windsor, it is especially so. it has turned out to be an annus horribilis. I suspect that I'm not alone in thinking it so.
Annus horribilis. Now, it was obviously a highly memorable phrase which has come to be closely associated with 1992 and, of course, the symbolism of the fire.
No institution, city, monarchy, whatever, should expect to be free from the scrutiny of those who give it their loyalty and support, not to mention those who don't.
She says we, like any other institution, need to be scrutinised, but also that we can reform. It's very, very significant as a piece of repositioning. It might not have been intended as such.
What happened next transformed the relationship between the royal family and the public forever.
A TV news report.
Ever since the Windsor fire, the Queen has been searching for a way of limiting the expense to the public of restoring the castle. Uproar followed the suggestion that taxpayers should foot the entire £30 to £40 million bill. But today's plan means neither the Queen nor the taxpayer should have to fork out an extra penny.
Buckingham Palace were unusually very proactive and quick to declare that they had a solution to this problem.
The decision was taken very quickly in a proposal made to the Queen that it might be possible to open up Buckingham Palace to the public to see and to pay for tickets.
Two tickets, please, and a guidebook, please.
Buckingham Palace would be open to the public, probably for a period of 5 years, and that would generate enough revenue to pay, they hoped, for the repairs at Windsor Castle.
She's very clever, I think, and she and her advisers that week, of turning the negative and the disaster into something positive that leads to reform of the institution.
The long process of restoring Windsor Castle began within days of the fire.
A crew in hard hats work in the gutted hall.
Leading the restoration project was the Duke of Edinburgh.
I think the renovation got underway really, really quickly, probably because Prince Philip took charge in many ways of everything, and he always was a man of action. He was going to get things done.
The Duke striding along.
The conservationists were saying, oh, we must allow 10 years for the building to dry out. He was having none of that. He wanted to push ahead.
I think a lot of skills were brought to bear to restore Windsor Castle and in some ways make it even more glorious than it had been before.
An equestrian statue in front of the castle. 20th of November 1997, the restored stone walls and turrets of Windsor Castle, then inside the long vaulted ceiling of St. George's Hall, decorated with colourful coats of arms.
The renovations at the castle were incredibly speedy, actually, for such a massive job of work. It seemed in no time at all, 5 years, it was back to perfection.
A refurbished room has an ornate gilded ceiling.
And incredibly, all that work, all that renovation came in under budget.
A red carpeted hallway.
You know, seeing it again, fully restored in 1997, really did remind you of the phoenix that had risen from the ashes.
Rising to the intricately decorated ceiling of St. George's Hall, then outside, the castle and its landscaped grounds bathed in sunshine.
There were some changes. I remember being shown that the private chapel had now been relocated. Sure, that had been Prince Philip's idea. And a lovely touch was that he decided that the fire, the great fire of Windsor Castle, should be commemorated, not forgotten. And he commissioned a stained glass window for that private chapel.
He was very straightforward. He knew what he wanted. We eventually came to a design for the window, but it was quite a slow process and quite complicated. we actually ended up with the religious resurrection of Christ rising, which was the top half of the design. And obviously, Windsor Castle itself had to feature very strongly. And then the bottom half of the window, the drama of the fire. They saved a portrait of the architect for Windsor Castle in the beginning of the 19th century.
A window shows a workman salvaging the portrait.
One of the images was of a fireman actually rescuing the picture and carrying it out of the ruined tower. And I actually made that part of my design, which the Duke did like.
Another shows a fireman battling flames.
I think it's great to see firefighters being recognised in something as significant as Windsor Castle. It's a real privilege.
This is a commemorative medal that everybody involved in the fire was gifted.
Yeah, I'm quite proud of that.
Firefighting's always been something that I've felt privileged to be able to do because of, you know, the opportunity you get to help people. I'm sure every firefighter feels much the same.
On a helmet, the Royal Berkshire Fire and Rescue badge.